Are you wanting to live a life with more clarity and happiness? I'm Tammy Hill, a licensed marriage and family therapist, sex therapist, professor at Brigham Young University, and most importantly, a wife, mother, and grandmother. I am also an optimist. I strive to live my life on purpose, with purpose. I am here to inspire people to do the things that inspire them, so that together, each of us can change our world for the better. Join me for my Live Your Why podcast. Together, we can live a life full of passion and purpose. Today, I am visiting with Dina Alexander on the Live Your Why podcast. Are there any of you out there who have small children? How is it going teaching them about their bodies and about sexuality? Well, if you want to have some of your questions answered today, make sure to listen in. Dina is an expert, and the ideas she will share with you are fantastic. Welcome to the Live Your Why podcast. I am really looking forward to having an important conversation with my friend Dina Alexander, who has written several books and who hosts the Educate and Empower website and Instagram account. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about how to teach our young children around sexuality. I know that a lot of you are young parents, and I feel like it's such an important topic that I want to spend more time on it here in the podcast, how to talk to 3 to 7-year-olds about sexuality and normalize that and get prepared for that most important role and responsibility that you have as parents, which is to teach your children about everything, including sex. So let me introduce to you Dina Alexander. Thanks for being here today, Dina.
Thanks for having me, Tammy. It's good to be here.
Thank you so much. Would you mind introducing yourself a little bit? Tell us about yourself and how you got involved with the books and the things that you do.
Absolutely. So I am currently living in New Mexico. I have 3 children, 2 adults. One is in college at BYU. One is serving a mission in Argentina. And my youngest is a junior in high school. And I have been talking to parents about healthy sexuality and its opposite, online pornography, as well as digital literacy and media literacy for about 9 years now. I started when my daughter was about 7th, 8th grade. And it all started with just me reading a simple article on Facebook about teen porn consumption. And it was something that was so crazy to me, so shocking, I had to do more research. So I started researching it, and I started particularly following the research of Dr. Gail Dines. She's from back east and basically is the foremost authority on pornography and media studies in the world. And so the things that she had been writing about, like I said, I couldn't believe the level of violence and basically depravity that our kids were being exposed to online. I probably, like a lot of other listeners, was pretty naive thinking that porn was just some kinky sex. What's the big deal? Yeah, I don't want my kids looking at it, but whatever, you know. And then I started researching it and I was like, nope. This is absolutely what they're saying. This is not just hysterical parents. And as I started to understand the messages, the underlying messages that were being sent to our children, particularly our daughters, well, and our sons too, about sex and sexuality, I realized, okay, I got to do something about this. I got to talk to parents. And at first I thought, well, maybe this is just a Latter-day Saint problem that people are afraid to talk about sex. And I thought, well, maybe my other Christian friends too. And then as I started to research and explore and talk with my friends, I realized, oh no, this is everybody. My atheist friends, my agnostic friends, my Jewish friends, no particular spiritual identity friends, all of them freaked out about talking to their kids about sex. And I thought, okay, I can't get them to talk about sex. How am I going to get them to talk to their kids about pornography? Mm-hmm. So I, like I said, I just researched like crazy. And I started reaching out to different people, including Dr. Gail Dines, other groups like Fight the New Drug. And I gathered a board, gathered people, because I realized there was not great resources for parents. There was resources for young men who were facing pornography issues, pornography habits, porn and sex addiction, but there was very few at that time, 9 years ago, for parents, and also few for spouses who were dealing with that. So I also reached out to other people who were starting that aspect. And then the first books we decided to write were the 30 Days of Sex Talks books. So we have one for ages 3 to 7, 8 to 11, and 12 plus. Last fall, we came out with our 30 Days of Sex Talks for Latter-day Saint families. And that's been an interesting process as far as just different books, because I thought at first I was just going to write a couple family home evening lessons and put them on Pinterest and pat myself on the back for being a good mom. And then I realized, okay, I got to get to as many parents as I can from whatever background, wherever I can. So that's kind of where it snowballed. And we started writing other books. We wrote another book called How to Talk to Your Kids About Pornography. We wrote 4 books for children, 2 of them on body image, another one called Noah's New Phone, a story about using technology for good, and Petra's Power to See, a media literacy adventure. And these are, again, all meant to help our kids understand the culture we're living in, understand the messages they're being sent from social media, from other forms of media, from family, from friends, and how they impact us, how they impact our self-worth, how they get us to view ourselves, how either they help us typically to feel bad about ourselves, and how we can combat that. All of my books have tons of discussion questions. I'm really big on just chatting with your kids, getting to know them, getting to know their ideas, whether that's at the dinner table, when you're putting them to bed at night, whatever, just using every opportunity you can to hear their views, to calm their fears, and just really empower them with the best information you can. I've also written a couple other books for LDS families. One's called This is the Spirit of Revelation. Another one is called The Powers of Heaven, which is about priesthood power for boys and girls. And I just feel like in the times we're living in, our kids need to know all the resources they have. They have mom and dad. They have community leaders. They have people at church, at school that can help them. That there are, of course, dangers, but there are, that we have a lot more power than we think we do, spiritually, intellectually, emotionally. And I know that always my motivation has been to help my kids and just any kid I could to know their worth and to know they have so many more options than they realize.
Mm. I'll give a plug for Dina's books. They are excellent. I love them. I use them. I've used them as a mother, and I've used them a little bit as a grandmother. I really appreciate the discussion questions. I also feel like discussion questions are imperative to really come to understand what is going on in their minds, to be able to help also give some moral direction in what these terms mean, or what, you know, what that happens with this and that. And so I love the discussion points. Today, I wanted to specifically talk with you about how parents can best teach sexuality to the children between the ages of 3 and 7. So before we jump into the 3-year-olds, what about from birth to 3? Is that mostly talking about correct terminology at body parts? Would you suggest anything different besides that in that gap?
That's a great question. I think that as we know our children, I think one that parents need to understand that you know and love your children better than anybody, and you just need to keep doing your best. None of us are going to do this perfectly. And you're going to notice with each of your children that it's different. Mm-hmm. We often have parents that they want us to script out these sex talks for them. And I have a really hard time with that, because I know for my own 3 children, it was 3 very different discussions. And there were things that we were able to talk to them together with. And so I know that with young parents, you might have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old, and we're pressed for time, we're tired, and we want to just do it all together and get it over with. And that's not always what's going to work. And so what's going to work for your 3-year-old is going to work different for my 3-year-old, because there is also a different range of emotional IQ, of intellectual understanding. And so sometimes we our questions that we have in our books, let's say, are for like a very mature 3-year-old or a very young 7-year-old, let's say. So it is super important that they start understanding. And you will see this again. And I think it's just to have more confidence in ourselves as parents. Hey, when you're bathing your child, when you're teaching them to talk, you're going to listen and you're going to see what they understand. So do they understand where their bottom is? Just like when you're teaching them, where's your eyes? Mm-hmm. Where's your tummy? Mm-hmm. You're going to just start those simple conversations of helping them understand that, yep, they have, you know, an anus and a penis or an anus and a vagina, right? And we're going to use that correct terminology. There's still people that don't like those words, but hey, they're the words we've got. And we have to use that language so that if something happens to them, they have the right words to share with an right. adult. If they're right. at school, if it's a policeman, if whatever, that they have those right words. So one of the books or one of the lessons in our 3 to 7 book is called My Body Poops and Pees. Well, how is that part of a sex talk? It's part of a sex talk. It's part of that anatomy. And it's, again, it's one of those things that can be very confusing. But so when they're little like that, we're going to just start planting those seeds of wherever we can. And you will again see what they take in and what they don't take in, but also realizing that many of these conversations need to be repeated. Mm-hmm. Most children are not one-time learners, particularly between the ages of 0 and 5. They're often 3 or 5-time learners. And that you will, again, as your children mature, you will be able to see, what are they? Are they 2-time learners? Do they need to be told to put the dishes in the dishwasher 2 times, or do they need to be told 10 times? you're going to learn that with each child. And so helping them with just basics of, you know, as they're learning to dress themselves, as they're learning to understand when they're in the bath that their bodies do different things. And as we have these conversations, even for under 3-year-olds, we are sending our kids a message of their value. So we want to help them know that their bodies are worth protecting, that they are special. So just like you give hugs and kisses, you are going to help them know that their bodies are amazing and special. You know, like when they first learn to walk and you're cheering and clapping for them so that they keep walking, right? Same kinds of things of where we are helping them understand that all of their body is worth right. protecting. Their eyes, their ears, their bottoms, mm-hmm. their tummies, whatever. And so we're going to, in that very young age, help them understand how important it is that clothing protects us. Yes, even that is part of a sex talk, right? That our clothing protects our bodies. It protects those private parts. And so somewhere in there between 2 to 4 is when you can often start talking about private parts, that I have my body, that I need to cover those body parts because they're special, not because there's anything wrong with them, not because they're gross or ew, but because they're special and that they're vulnerable, right? So again, even when they're little and you're changing a diaper, we're not going to go, ew, oh, you pooped. Ah! We're going to be still positive. Even if it stinks like crazy, you're still going to be smiling at your child like, oh, aren't you adorable, right? Simple things like that. And again, just paying very close attention to what they are understanding. That when you share, you know, oh, this is your bottom. What does your bottom do? Why do we have a bottom? Oh, is that to poop? Is it to sit on? Yes. Oh my goodness. Yes. You understand. Again, that is probably the most basic kind of thing we can do with that super young child. And then you're going to see on that, okay, they understood that. They understood the word no. Okay, what's the next step I can take with this very young child? You know, do they understand that I can say no to other people? So again, I know I'm kind of jumping ahead, but again, these are just sort of the building blocks of where we're going to take off from there. Mm-hmm. You know, like even in our books, we have a discussion on play and a discussion on how boys and girls are alike. Well, these are the building blocks to those future discussions on gender identity, which is becoming such a hot topic, which mm-hmm. is becoming utterly bizarre and not scientifically based. And so we need to start 3 and 4. Yep, you're a boy. You're a girl and you're amazing. These are the amazing things you can do as a girl. These are the amazing things you can do as a boy. Wow. Aren't you lucky? Aren't you blessed to have this amazing body?
Right.
So that's part of that whole, now we're kind of moving into that 2 to 4 to 5 range of them understanding, one, that their bodies are super amazing and that their body belongs to them. And that is a repeated discussion throughout all of childhood. My body belongs to me.
Mm-hmm.
I get to do what I want with my body, that I can say no if someone wants to touch me or hug me or kiss me, even grandma, even mom and dad, that, yep, you don't have to hug or kiss me if you don't want to. Helping them understand, because we need our kids to be able to say no to other people. And if they are learning that they have to give grandma a kiss, that they have to participate in that forced affection, it's going to be very difficult for them to understand when it's not okay, when it is okay to say no to an adult. So that's a great discussion that, again, will be repeated, that no, you're not going to say no to mom when she tells you to pick up your toys. But yeah, you can say no to somebody who wants to hug you or pat you on the bum, etc.
So a lot of the research talks about how good moms in particular are at teaching their young children about sexual safety. And that is so important. I think both of us are on the same page that way. What we aren't so good about talking about is sexual goodness and the pleasure that can come from these sexual parts of our bodies. And so, Dina, I get concerned sometimes because the focus is sex and fear, because it's all about being safe. When I also want to include, this is a good thing. This is a wonderful part of being human. How do you suggest infiltrating those two messages?
So a lot of times it's easy because, again, kids are far more observant than we give them credit for. So if you're pregnant with your next child, you have a friend that's pregnant, that is usually when those questions start. And it is okay, though, as mom or dad, to start discussing that or asking your kids about that before they even ask, okay? Because we always want to establish ourselves as the source. And research shows that we believe the first source we hear. If I hear a story from CNN first and then Fox News second, I'm more likely to believe CNN's story because I heard it there first. So we want to be that first source. So that's why I know when I was a young mom, I was often told, well, wait till they ask the question. Wait till they ask, mm-hmm. where do babies come from? Or how did daddy put the baby in you? I definitely got that question and I had waited for that question. But now I realize I could have started that discussion beforehand, that it's okay for me. And again, just being really positive, you know, they're not going to always remember every word we say. I wish they did. Well, not the bad stuff I say, right? But I don't remember what my mom told me. I just remember my mom was so positive about sex that she would talk about it like this, and that I never had negative thoughts about my future sexual experiences. And I had been exposed to a lot of negative media, right? At other people's houses. I remember being 7 years old and seeing a rape scene in a movie. But again, I did not translate that over to sex is bad because my mom was so continually positive throughout my childhood that it was, even though she was, you know, very conservative and spoke about it from a, we wait till we're married to have sex, it was something I knew to look forward to, that it was a wonderful thing. So first, our tone of voice, always positive. Positive about our bodies, positive about ourselves, never speaking ill of our own bodies. That is something that our little girls and boys are listening to so much, is when we say, oh, I'm so fat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I did this. I heard that a lot. I always thought my mom was fat because she told me she was.
Mm.
I look back at those pictures and I'm like, she was not fat, right? Or she was just, you know, you could tell she had 4 or 5 kids, right? It was not like super overweight or anything. So being positive with ourselves and then again, starting to incorporate those discussions. So again, as we talk about our anatomy with young 3 to 5-year-olds, we want to let our daughters know they have a vagina and a urethra, that those are 2 different parts. I did not know that until I was probably 10, 11 years old, that I had 2 different holes, as it was, down there. That's sad. Our kids do not need to wait that long to hear that they have sexual parts. And again, that they're worth protecting, not because they're dirty or bad, but because they're special. And we need to speak about those body parts just like we would our elbow. Matter of factly, yep, I have an elbow and I have a vagina.
Okay.
No big deal. But again, they're special. And so again, in those discussions of, we want to keep ourselves safe, but it's also because they're special, not because there's anything wrong with these body parts, but again, helping them to understand. So again, take that opportunity, either if you're pregnant or your spouse is pregnant or someone in the neighborhood, someone in the ward, someone down the street, ask them, you know, what's going on there? What happened to their tummy? Do they have a baby in their tummy? How do you think that baby got there? You know, it's okay to have those discussions, and you can keep it really simple when they're little. Oh, okay. They had, you know, if you want to make it as simple as, oh, the man has semen and he put it inside his wife's, you know, vagina and the, you know, and then explains egg and sperm coming together. That again is something that you will gauge with your child. If they're just like, staring off into space and they don't care, then you know, okay, they're not quite ready for that discussion. Or if you ask them, if they show zero interest, you can wait a little bit, mm-hmm. not forever. Okay, you don't wait until they're 8, 9, 10 to know how that happens. But you want to kind of keep an eye on that because that's a great thing. This is the single most amazing experience in the human in our human lives, creating life, the opportunity to create life in our bodies. This is not something to be ashamed or embarrassed about. This is something to tell our kids that this is the most amazing thing that a human body can do, mm-hmm. is to create a life. So again, just keeping it really positive and taking the initiative to help them understand. Because again, then those are the starting points. You know, it's like, oh, okay, do you just have a baby with anybody? No, you, and then you tell them your cultural values as to what, you know, that needs to happen. What makes it okay to have a baby? You know, oh, do you need to have a husband and wife? You know, again, that's up to you and how you, what you value. But you will kind of help them understand that, again, this is something amazing and special, not anything to be embarrassed about. And if you are nervous about it, mm-hmm. again, write down a few notes. Because again, it's okay to prepare. We don't want to plan an event when we talk about these things. We want it to be pretty simple. But it's okay to talk with your partner for 5 minutes, be on the same page, because often one parent has very different views than you. But to be on the same page and then be like, hey, we're going to talk about this with our kids. I want them to know because I want them to hear it from me and not on the playground or from somebody else or from media, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So being really positive.
Yeah. Yes, I think that's important. I also teach and encourage people to get comfortable talking about these things themselves. And I encourage people to hold their little babies, rock them back and forth as they're rocking, to start explaining that you have a vulva or a penis and you will ejaculate or you will menstruate. And as you're rocking this baby, the baby's being nurtured and loved and doesn't have a clue what you're saying. However, what's happening is you're hearing yourself talk about these things, and you can try a different way and keep working on it until it starts feeling a lot more comfortable to talk like that. I think it's so important to practice when they're little.
Practice. Absolutely. Thank you for saying that, because that was something I missed here, was that it's about practice. You know, I did not immediately start these, even after all the research I did. You know, it was not, there's never going to be a perfect discussion, but it's all about practicing so you have that confidence. I mean, I have talked to, I don't know how many parenting experts around the country. Every single one of them has a horror story of how they messed up one of these conversations. Not all of them, not a majority, but that they said something that they weren't planning, that they were embarrassed, that they said this, or that they said something that was either maybe too conservative or that they felt was just too liberal with that child of that age. But they brought it back, and it was about practicing, mm-hmm. you know, that it's, and again, I love that as soon as they're little, that you get comfortable using those words.
Right.
Because I've often heard and I've said myself is get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And again, that starts a lot of times with our own partners, mm-hmm. of having the ability to speak with your partner about this is what I like sexually. This is what I don't like. This is what I'm enjoying. This is what you're doing right. This is what I like. Again, being open there, that's the best way to start so that it's not a big deal when you talk to your kids about the amazing things that their body parts can do and that how amazing and wonderful sex is.
Mm-hmm. I also really think sometimes, especially as they get a little older, that for me, I don't know, there is different talking to my partner about sexuality than is to my young children,
sure.
Right?
I hope so. It better be.
There's this fear that you're going to say something wrong or that... And I know a fear that a lot of people have had through time is that if you talk about the pleasure and the enjoyment that you have with sex, that children will experiment with sex younger, which is not true. There's nothing that backs that up. But I know for me, I would go practice in front of my mirror and I would try to say things until my face didn't make any expression that looked uncomfortable. Because if your child senses that you're uncomfortable, they're less likely to come again with a question. And so I think practicing and watching your face is also a good idea.
That is a great idea.
So we've talked a little about birth to three. Now, 4 to 5 year olds, they're starting to play with friends, going to preschool, 5, maybe even starting kindergarten. So there's going to be a lot of new social interactions that are happening and circumstances. What might be a little different with this age group?
So the great thing at this age is, like we already talked about, is again, reiterating the importance of protecting ourselves and clothing, but also being respectful of other people. Because as we teach them to be respectful of other people's bodies and other people's boundaries, that's where they learn that they can have boundaries. And so it's a great discussion to talk about, you know, affection. What do you like? Do you like high fives? Do you prefer it when mom gives you a hug or when I give you a kiss? Do you prefer a side hug? Do you prefer sitting on my lap and cuddling? You discuss the things. And then that's a great opportunity for you to learn because often that evolves over childhood as to what a child likes as far as affection. But then you can also, then you lead into a discussion of, well, how should we be with our friends at school? Do you think all of them want hugs all day long? You know, is it okay for us to start, you know, like I have a nephew, sweetheart, since he was a baby, loves playing with his mom's hair and other women's hair, right? And I would see him on the playground as a, you know, 2 and 3 year old walking up to little girls and start touching their hair. And of course, we thought it was adorable, but also great discussion to have of not everybody likes that. That's not a, you know, we don't want to always just touch anybody we want. And the same thing, there's sometimes we don't want to be touched. So asking our kids what they want in life and from strangers, you know, I don't want to talk to strangers. My kids were always very shy. In the grocery store, someone would start talking and that was okay. Or if I talked to a child at church or grocery store, they don't want to talk back. I always say, that's okay. You don't have to talk to me. I'm a stranger. You don't need to talk to me. That's totally fine. And so helping our kids understand that they have boundaries that need to be respected and their friends do and their teachers do and their relatives do. And so all of this, great discussion. And it's something that, again, will need to be repeated.
So teaching now at this stage a little bit more about boundaries for your body and for other people's bodies. And then as we move into 6 to 7 year olds, what are some things that we also start seeing that are really important for us to start talking about and engaging with our little 6 and 7 year olds?
So there's a huge variety there. So again, we're going to reiterate that discussion about respect. Mm-hmm. We also want to add in talking about other terminology they've heard. At this point, they're going to have been on the playground. They're going to have watched enough television or YouTube videos to have picked up other terminology for body parts, for sex, for pornography, whatever. So it's important to have a discussion of, oh, what are the other words you've heard for the word breasts? You know, oh, I've heard, you know, when I was a kid, they had different words. What are the things that you hear at school? Oh, okay. And just being real chill about it, real calm. Again, like you said, maybe practicing in the mirror because you're going to be surprised. Your kids are going to say something. They're going to, you know, you're going to be surprised that one 4 or 5 year old who's going to be like, oh, I've heard this, and they'll say the F word, and you're going to be like, okay, where were you hearing that? So we want to be really cognizant of that. This is also where we need to start talking about even, maybe even younger, if you are handing your child an unfiltered phone for them to play on or look at, which I hope you're not, you're going to need to start talking about pornography at that young age. My daughter was exposed very young on the playground by another girl, right? We always think of it being boys, please stop thinking that. It's girls too, that they're being exposed from other kids on the playground, on the bus, at scout camp, at church, wherever. And so we need to start having the discussions of not only what other words you've heard, what are some things that you've seen, you know, and letting them know, you know, that that's not a good place to learn about bodies and sex, but also letting them know it's natural and good to be curious. That is how we have survived as a species on this planet. So having a whole discussion about curiosity. What are the things that we're curious about? You know, that, oh, that's great. I'm curious about dinosaurs and animals, whatever. Our kids are all going to have different things they're curious about. Compliment them on this. Help them to understand that you always want them to ask you questions. And maybe, you know, have a time. We always call it setting up a safe zone, where if our kids can, where we tell our kids and they can understand by that 6 and 7, sometimes 5, that they can have, if they're embarrassed about a question, that they can always pull mom or dad aside and have what's called the safe zone. And this is a time where they can ask questions or tell you something without getting in trouble. Okay. Without any judgment, that they can ask you anything in the world, even if they think that, you know, it's embarrassing. And maybe you want to model for them what that might look like, and letting them know that they can always ask you questions and that you love them no matter what. And that is something so important to be reiterated throughout, is that, that I've told my kids repeatedly, you know, there's nothing they can do to make me stop loving them, and that they can ask or do anything. And I've also said, you know, yeah, if you were to do something horrible, like beat somebody up or commit a major crime, yeah, I would be disappointed in you. I would be sad and I would be angry, but I would still never stop loving you. So I like to sometimes show that extreme so that they understand that the asking me of a question or confessing a mistake that they made is very little, is very small compared to the real world, and that they, there's nothing they can do that will get me to stop loving them. So back to the thing. So again, we're going to start talking about, we're going to reiterate again, because again, by that point, they're going to have more babies. It's usually at that 3 to 5, you saying to them, oh, well, daddy, you know, has semen and he put it inside me and it connected with the egg. That might get you by in that 3 to 5. But that 6 to 7, they're going to want more details. And you're going to need to say, oh, a man puts his penis inside a woman's vagina. And that's, you know, the semen connects with the egg up in the fallopian tubes. And then the egg comes into the uterus and it starts becoming an embryo and then into a fetus. And it's then a baby's born. So, and then they're going to be like, wait, he puts his penis inside your vagina? And you're going to be like, yep. And this is something, you know, and then again, that's a point to share your values. And you can say, this is something so special and wonderful. And they're going to look at you with absolute disgust on their face. And you're going to be like, that's okay. I know that you don't, that that sounds really gross to you, or you don't like that. But, you know, again, when you're a grown up, this is something really special and wonderful that you get to share with your partner. And sharing that is, and then you can talk about the positive aspects of sex, of how this is something that you can use to show love, that it's one of many ways that parents show love to one another. So again, you're just going to see where your child is and then layer on that discussion. Now, it's also important to me because sometimes people think that talking about porn or talking about sex are very different discussions. To me, they need to be talked about together because they need to understand the opposite parts of it. If we want our kids to understand the light, they have to understand darkness as well. So they need to see that they're going to see this stuff. They're going to see pictures of naked people, or they're going to see videos of that at some point, but that this is not what real sex and real love is. That this are actors, that this is fake, that this is not an appropriate way to show love. Because again, we need to be able to help them understand that, one, it's not real, but also that there's no affection, love, intimacy in what they're seeing, and that that's not real love. that is just an act. And again, that helping them to also sort through the feelings they're going to have. You want to prepare them to know that
right. They're
going to see this, and part of them might like it, but part of them might feel scared. Part of them might be disgusted. And I think that's one of the hardest things for kids as they do see pornography, because they haven't been prepared. They're horrified. They know something's wrong. They know it's not right. And then, but they also feel simultaneously aroused. This is so incredibly confusing for a young child, 7, 8, 9. Remember, most of our kids are being exposed in that 8 to 10 range now. It's getting lower and younger as parents foolishly give their kids phones younger and younger. And so they're being exposed there with friends. And again, like that, and it's like, again, think back to your childhood. This is also something important as we have these discussions and think about is, what would you have needed at their age? What would your response have been to seeing pornography at a young age? And again, it's not just a picture in a Playboy, but what would you have thought if you saw, you know, oral sex in pornography at the age of 8? You would have been, again, very confused, perhaps aroused, perhaps disgusted. And so again, that's where we want to be able to have had these discussions to prepare them, or even just if you're afraid to talk that deeply about it before they're exposed, at least help them understand those different feelings.
Mm-hmm.
The feeling of arousal, the feeling of shame, the feeling of disgust, and helping them again to understand those feelings so that when they are encountering it for the first time, they can make sense of it a little bit more and perhaps it won't be as traumatic.
Yeah. I'm sure you're familiar with Kristen Jensen and Defend Young Minds. I love her books and the things that she also presents on how to respond to pornography as well. I remember a long time ago reading that it's best for children to understand about reproductive facts about 5 years prior to having sexual arousal feelings within their own bodies physiologically, so that they have the cognitive ability to process this act without all of the emotions that come from the feelings of arousal. And so for me, I've really tried to make sure my children before the age of 8 really do have a good idea about reproduction. Have you read anything different about that? Or would you recommend this as 6 to 7? They really need to know this.
Absolutely. I think, again, as young as they can and as young as they can understand. And like I said, I have 3 different kids and they were very different in their understanding of certain parts. I have, you know, they had different sensitivities mm-hmm. as to what they were sensitive to and what they, again, cognitively could understand. And so that's where we need to be really thoughtful and paying attention. But also, as soon as you feel they are able to understand, you need to explain those mechanics, just like you might explain how our bodies digest food.
Right.
Okay. You might want to explain how, if you get pricked on the finger, how the pain or the feeling of that travels up your body, up to your brain, and gives you a signal. It's just, you can use that as part of a greater context to just understanding, again, our anatomy and our biology, how our bodies work. And that, again, is giving them, like you said, that cognitive understanding. So as soon as they can understand, maybe when they're 5, you've given them some kind of cool anatomy book that you picked up at Costco. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Start there, how that heart works, how the blood pumps throughout your body. All of those things, to me, again, as a kid and to my children, super fascinating.
Right.
I remember very young showing them different birthing videos on YouTube. Now, they did not show full out vagina. I actually hoped at a certain age that they would show the baby coming out, but they pretty much never did. But that was 10 years ago. So you have to check out YouTube on your own first for that. Right. But again, I wanted them to understand. And they were, I mean, the utter fascination, because I did not have videos of my births. Right. That was, we couldn't afford that kind of camera back when I was that young, right? And so helping them, and again, just understanding the miracle of this, the amazing part of this. And so, but it's, again, a natural function of human existence.
Right.
That there's, again, nothing to be embarrassed that, again, wow, isn't that amazing? That woman held a baby in her life and in her body and delivered it, you know. So helping them to see just the beauty and amazing things that our bodies can do as soon as they can understand it. So if that is 6 or 7, yes, and I agree, way before they start feeling those feelings of arousal, because otherwise it is confusing. It can be shocking. It can be uncomfortable. And again, our kids are already going to have enough problems in life. You know, there's many things that, like, I tried to protect my kids from. And then there's things I didn't want to protect them from, as they, like, you know, that they were going to have a friend at school that rejected them. They were going to get a bad grade on a test. They were going to have arguments with their siblings, that there was things they had to learn on their own, but there are things I needed to teach them first, mm-hmm. so that when they did come to that trial, that experience in life, they were ready to face
right.
it. And again, a lot of times we worry with our kids that we are, like you said, creating this unnecessary curiosity, and like, that's garbage. Okay. You're not taking your child, their childhood away. You're not taking the magic of childhood away. You are simply empowering them with knowledge,
right.
so that when they do come across those things, when they do see pornography, when they do have that first feeling of arousal, when they do come across a predator who makes them feel uncomfortable, they're going to have some of those, they're going to have those ideas of, okay, wait, no, this doesn't feel right. Or, no, I don't want to do that. That doesn't feel good. That, no, my mom told me that was wrong. They will have that foundation
right.
there.
And some language to use to
Absolutely.
Prevent it and do things. All right. Those are such helpful things. I wanted to just get, I know you've shared a few things about discussion questions from your books that you can start talking at bedtime or whenever. What are some other, like, daily natural conversations that we can have with our real small children that can kind of help us incorporate this sexual language and understanding?
Great question. So first, we need to think about, when are our kids most chatty, right? Each of my kids was a little different when they were really little. Mm-hmm. Typically, I had to be on the floor with them, sometimes laying on my stomach so that I was way down at their level to have, so I knew they were listening, that I wasn't standing above them, speaking down to them.
Like,
and as my kids got to that 5, 6, 7 range, it became pretty clear that their most chatty time was during bath time or bedtime. So that is where I wanted to have the best discussions, but also where I wanted to be listening the most, because that is where my kids just spilled their guts, right? Mm-hmm. About their day, about something that they dreamed about, something that they, you know, a story they had made up in their mind, whatever, right? That those were the times that I wanted to use with my kids. As they got older, it became the dinner table. You know, middle school, high school particularly was when, if I had something important to say, that's when it was. So first, think about when your kids are most chatty or when they're most willing to listen. So that might be for you in a car drive on the way to dance practice, on the way to grandma's house, that, you know, that's a, you have a good 20-minute drive there where they're listening. And I've also had important discussions where I've pulled the car over, not because I was mad or because I was like, okay, wait, I need you guys to listen to this because this is really important. And so you finding what is the best time for your kids, because it's not always going to be at a time that's convenient for us. Mm-hmm. We need to think about, when is my child most likely to listen? And so we want to first be aware of that and then just use those everyday opportunities. The easiest one for me, because again, I know a lot of parents are uncomfortable. So first, let's say you haven't had any of these discussions and your child is 7 years old right now or 6 years old. You might not be ready or feel ready to talk, to go right into talking about the penis going inside the vagina, right? Or talking about other types of sex. So think about what you are most comfortable with right now. Start where you are. And maybe that is a discussion about respect.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, of affection. Hey, you know what? I really love it when you give me hugs and kisses. What do you like? You know, is that okay with mom giving you a hug and a kiss? Maybe it's a discussion about that. Maybe it's going to talk, then you're going to maybe lead into a discussion about respecting other people at preschool, in, you know, public school or whatever. But you find those discussions that you're comfortable with first and then add on. So you start in the easy place and then it becomes, then you're building that practice, right? You're already starting your repertoire of terminology, of boundaries, you know, talking about how amazing their bodies are. These are simple discussions right. of talking about how special. So start there. So then that way, and again, these are your test opportunities. Okay, I tried having that discussion while we were driving in the car and my child was just not listening. So I know that I need to be eyes to eyes with this child, you know, in their room or sitting next to them at dinner. Determine where those are for you and then practice and do it. And they will start flowing and you will be surprised, as I was when we wrote these books. Everyone on the board took them home and practiced them with their kids. And the thing that we found the most in having these discussions, in showing our kids that we were open and willing to talk about this, was the amazing questions all of us got back. We thought, okay, I'm going to plan, because we wrote our books for 5 and 10 minute discussions. And we, all of us, were surprised. And everyone that, you know, tried the books out with us as a preview said, I cannot believe the great discussions we had. I cannot believe how many questions my kids asked back when I initiated one or two questions, because they were letting their kids know, I'm willing to talk about these things, that there is nothing embarrassing about these discussions. And because it was a great time to spend time with mom and dad, they had mom and dad's full attention and that they knew that they were in a safe place to discuss what they needed to.
Such good points. So I'm making sure that this, I really appreciate you saying get down on their level so that you're having eye contact where they are and being able to kind of gauge that interest and what they're thinking. And also that having this be time that is consistent and having both mom and dad there when possible, I think that is such a blessing to kids to have both parents involved with this type of conversation.
Because a lot of times it falls to mom.
Right.
And a lot of dads are afraid to have these discussions, or they're definitely afraid to have these discussions with their daughters.
Right.
And again, that in itself is a whole nother set of issues that we can create with our kids that are unnecessary.
Right.
Of helping them know that they can talk with mom and dad. And again, if you have a partner that is uncomfortable, sometimes it's the husband, sometimes it's the wife, get to the root cause of that. Because a lot of times when we analyze our fears about talking about sex, often you are able to find out where your baggage is. A lot of us have had sexual abuse in our lives. A lot of us have had shaming or different things that went on as we grew up. Get to the root of that, because you need to figure that out for your children's
right.
sake. Your kids are worth you finding out what your hangups are and working through them.
Yes. And if you face your anxieties, do the work, you'll come out on the other side such a more mature and wholehearted person.
Absolutely.
So, all right. I always like to ask my listeners what their why is. And so as we kind of wrap up today, I am curious about your why. What is it that you feel like is your purpose, and how do you choose to live aligned to that?
Thanks for asking that. My why, I like to be useful. I like to be helpful, whether that is to my children, to people I go to church with, my buddy at the gym this morning that is having a hard time and just listening. And so I like to be useful and helpful. So that's why, again, the books we've written, they're not flowery, they have a purpose, you know, that they are, there's a point to each of them. And there are questions in there that I feel like will help a huge variety of parents from a huge variety of backgrounds to help them. Because again, those are the things, a lot of these resources I have done are ones that I wish I had had when I was younger, that I wish my parents had had.
Right.
To just have some calm, interesting, you know, fascinating discussions, and to just build that relationship. That's also my why. Is one of the blessings of forming this organization and writing these books was the amazing discussions I had with my kids. And they're the most important people in my life. And that as I am, you know, my kids are getting older, I'm already thinking about being a grandma someday. And I hope that I can help my kids in these discussions and help them with just forming those strong relationships that will help get them through the rough times that we're in.
Yes. And so important as the world changes, that having these conversations and this home focus, you know, center of information that is so important. Thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate you very much, my friend.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
You take care.
Thank you.